Last time round, we thought we finished chapter 29. I say we thought we finished because I found something as I was preparing Paraklamed, chapter 30, basically we had this whole idea last time from the Malbim that was so intricate and so fascinating, and unfortunately I don't want to say it's wrong, because he's the Malbim and I'm not, but he's ignoring a pasuk. So let's remember what happened in chapter 29. David has said he's willing to go to war along with his men by the side of Achish against the Jews. Achish's men protest. The Sarim come to him and say, no way, David is not going to be loyal. He's going to want to get in good with his former boss, with Shaul. Achish says to David, you know, the Sranim are complaining about this. They're not happy about you being with me. Better to leave. And David says, what do you mean? I've been good. And Achish responds, saying, yeah, but the Sarim just really don't like it. You go home with all of your men. Right? That was a basic summary of it. And we saw a couple of different approaches, right? We saw one approach which suggests that that David wants to, that's appropriate for him to do so. He's just going to be a bodyguard for Achish. And but he really wants to get out of it. And he wants to, he thinks he has to do it, but he wants to get out of it. He's even davening to Hashem to get out of it, as Abarbanel put it. And the reason why he pushes to go, even after Achish's first statement that he should leave, is because he wants to get his men out of going as well. That was one school of thought. Then we saw the second school of thought, which said, no, he actually wants to sabotage Achish. That's his goal, and he wants to be able to stay there. But within the back and forth, we saw the view of Malbim, which was fascinating, and Malbim picks up on the fact that it says the Sarim are the ones who complain, and Achish says it's the Sranim, and then after David pushes, then he says it's the Sarim. So Malbim suggested that it was the Sarim, the military officers, who were concerned. However, Achish told him it's the Sranim, it's the leaders of each of the Philistine cities, and their objection to you is because you're close to me, and they, in their position as governors, don't think that that's right. They're jealous that you should get to be close to me. And then when David protests, then he reverts and says, okay, fine, it's really the Sarim, it's really the officers, right? That was the way that Malbim framed it. So, take a look, please. If you look on your sheet, I gave you the reference, at Divrei Hayamim Aleph, chapter 12, sentence 20. In general, we're going to want to look at this chapter a little bit later, this Divrei Hayamim Aleph 12, so keep your hand on it even after we're done with what we're going to say now. But specifically, look at sentence 20. This chapter is talking about people who joined David. And it says, Umi Menashe Nafalu al David. There were Jews from the tribe of Menashe. Remember, we assume that it's Yehuda who's with David. There were people from Menashe who joined David. Bivo'o im plishtim al Sha'ul milchama velo azaram. When David came with the Plishtim against Shaul in battle, but he did not help the Plishtim. And then it says, why didn't he help the Plishtim? Ki ve'etza shilchuhu sarnei filishtim. Because it was with counsel that the Plishtim sent him home, saying, Barashenu yipol el adonav Shaul. With our heads, he will go back to his master Shaul. So it said that they didn't want him there. They didn't want David there. They sent him home because they said he is going to want to join with Shaul. But here's the key. Who is it who is sending him home? What does the text say? Sarnei Plishtim, right. Not Sarei Plishtim, but Sarnei Plishtim. So this pasuk says that the Sranim are the ones who send David home. Not the Sarim. So, you know, Malbim knows this text First of all, he's going to reference this entire chapter from Divrei Hayamim a little bit later when we learn chapter 30, but also he wrote a commentary on it. It's possible that, I'm just going to mute people because I got background noise here. It's possible that he simply forgot this pasuk when he was writing. That could be. It's also possible that maybe he felt there's a way to rewrite it, to say that it was Achish saying it in the name of the Sranim, or it's possible he just really, really likes the idea, looking at the way it's worded in our chapter, and so therefore he's going to go ahead and present the idea as is. I don't know. But it would seem that this line, flies in the face of what he had said. Clear? Okay, so that's just follow-up from last time. Yes, Susan. I can't hear you.
Why wasn't the Rehamim incorporated into Shmuel? Why wasn't the Rehamim, would be so much easier if it was all put together.
So Divrei Hayamim is a completely separate book. If you go back to what we did when we introduced Shmuel, I believe we had a discussion then about why Shmuel is its own book at all. Because really, you could argue part of it belongs in Shoftim and part of it belongs in Melachim. And we said there are specific ideas that we want to convey in Shmuel about monarchy and about righteousness and lessons from David and lessons from Shmuel. Divrei Hayamim is Ezra's book that he writes in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, and as Abarbanel writes, he's trying to strengthen the Davidic monarchy. He wants to make sure everyone's going to be loyal to David. It's a completely separate book without the prophecy of Shmuel. It's not...
I understand that. I'm just thinking it would be so easy if somebody put that together and, almost like in brackets and
if you want, maybe there's a market for it, create it and pitch it to people. But they're really different books with different levels of sanctity and different missions. So, that's why they're not. But as a reference book, I hear what you're saying. I keep on jumping back and forth. Last year when we did Malachim, I had to jump back and forth between Malachim and Divrei Hayamim because there were times where you got more information in one and it supplemented or gave new life for the other. I agree with you that it would make it easier. Okay, so let's do a review of chapter 29. Just quick, you see on your sheet, 6 quick review questions. It was a short chapter. First of all, in chapter 28, the Plishtim were near the Jews in Shunem, up north, where they're going to attack. Why are they suddenly in Afek at the start of our chapter? What was our answer? We gave 2 answers, right? One answer was that Afek is actually not the Afek we are familiar with that's down south, or more south anyway. Rather, this Afek is actually up where the Jews are battling, and we said the word Afek could really mean a geographic feature that it could be found in multiple places. Alternatively, it was because chapter 29 is describing events that took place before chapter 28 with the oath. It's describing what happened when the Philistines were first getting organized for battle before chapter 28, which describes Shaul's panic about the battle. Right? We had both explanations. What does David expect to do at the battlefield against the Jews? Right? We had 2 approaches to that, right? What were they?
Sabotage.
Right.
To sabotage
the Achish and the Plishtim.
Achish, yeah.
Yeah, or?
Just to stand aside and look at it.
He'll be the bodyguard. He's not going to sabotage him, he's not going to help him, and he's going to hope that Hashem gets him out of the whole thing. That was Abarbanel. Good. What do we learn from the fact that the Philistines quote the women's song about David? right? When they're trying to convince Achish that David is a threat. What did we learn from the fact that they quote the women's song? Exactly. They've got spies. They know what's going on among the Jews, which is something we wondered about. In terms of Shaul's decline, did they know about that and that's why they sent Goliath against the Jews back in chapter 17? And also, did they know about the falling out between David and Shaul such that now Achish in chapter 27 accepted David? Good. Why does Achish mention that David should leave the battlefield, quote, with the other servants of your master? Why does he say that?
He wants him to take his men with him.
Right. So one approach, similar to what Ruth is saying, is that Abarbanel says it's to preserve David's honor. I'm not singling you out, you go along with the rest of them. But Radak seems to say that what he's trying to do is to say, I suspect wrongdoing. These are servants of Shaul who left him. I don't know that they're actually going to do what they're supposed to do. I don't know that they're actually going to be loyal to me. Maybe they're going to want to go back to Shaul, as in fact was alleged by the Sarim. Achish changed the words of the complaint of the men when telling it to David, and then he reverted back to their words. At first he said, it's about you being near me, and then he said, it's about the overall fear that the thing something's going to happen at the battle. So why does he change their words and then revert? So one approach is that it's about not wanting to offend David, which I think is a remarkable thing. And then he sends everybody home, collectively, like we said, to cover up the offense. Alternatively, Malbim suggested, we said, he makes it seem like they're jealous of him being close to Achish, but then he needs to disclose the truth in order to get David to leave the battlefield. Janine, you were going to say? No? Okay. And then the last one. Why does David push to go to the battlefield? We had two explanations. Straightforward.
Makes it convincing that he's on the side of Achish.
So actually, the commentators don't go with that per se. They see more of a motivation here. Building on the idea, though, Malbim says it's because he wants to get his men sent home, not just him. And Ralbag / Rabbazak says because he wants to stay and sabotage. He actually doesn't want to go home. He wants to be able to help the Jews. Okay? Good? So that's all wrap up from chapter 29, which brings us to chapter 30. Chapter 30 is a horror. It begins with Amalek. So I'm going to ask a question, which we've already asked and answered before, but because it's easy to forget. Didn't we wipe them out in chapter 15, right? All but Agag, and then Shmuel knocked out Agag.
Right? No, we mentioned at the time that somebody may have escaped.
Right. So there is this medrash about Agag, you know, impregnating somebody that night before Shmuel killed him, and the problem being, of course, that there hasn't been enough time for that, you know, infant to be born, not infant, for that, you know, child to be born, let alone rally a force. I also want to note, 1 second, Sandy, I also want to note that we saw in chapter 27 that David attacked local Amalekite tribes. Right? When David is fighting the local tribes, one of them is Amalek. So now it's really hard to understand, and David is supposed to be wiping that out. So how does this happen? So Eddie gives an answer, which I'm going to come back to. Sandy, what were you going to say?
With Amalek, didn't he let the animals, he kept the animals, and they were known to pretend to be people, were known to hide amongst the animals, pretending to be them, so that's why a whole lot of them also escaped.
Right. So I'm going to come back to that idea as well. Thank you. So the first mention, yeah, Janine.
Were they all in one place and all annihilated?
Right.
Or was it just a local battle?
Right.
There were four other ladies.
So that was the first idea I was going to mention. Thank you. If you look at source number two, back in Sefer Yehoshua, when we list all these kings Yehoshua defeats, Radak makes a comment. He says, Kol Eile Shloshim Ve'achad Melachim Shezocher, all these 31 kings were mentioned, Lo Haya Melech Al Ir Achaz Levada. They're not kings over individual cities. Ela Kol Ir Ve'ir Shezocher Haisa Rosh Mamlachto. The cities were mentioned there are capital cities. Vaya Moshel Al Yaros Ukfarim Acherim. And the kings are kings over multiple areas, multiple cities, multiple communities. So that's an easy answer to me. We know there was a land called Eretz HaAmaleki. So there's no reason to think that there's only one, specific Amalekite city. You could also suggest, as Abarbanel does regarding chapter 27, if you take a look at source number 3, this is in the context of a separate question. Remember what David is doing in chapter 27. He is fighting local tribes and telling Achish that the spoils come from the Jews in order for Achish to think that he has been fighting the Jews, right? And we asked the question at that point of why he's fighting these tribes, and Abarbanel says that David could not possibly be fighting Amalek here unless Achish is good with it. It must be that Achish is okay with that, with David fighting these local tribes. They're not allies of Achish. Something that we'll see evidence for later in chapter 30. We'll actually see support for that. And Abarbanel gives a reason to say that Achish would have been okay with it in source number 3. He says, "Im haya osa zeh pa'amim rabos." If David did this many times, like the text actually says, David did this, this was his practice, all through the period when he's living with the Philistines, however long that was, we've discussed. If so, how could we say that he didn't leave anybody alive in the places he went? He says, it can't be. He says, it has to be that David was okay with that Achish was okay with David carrying out these attacks, because otherwise Achish would have found out. Somebody would have survived these battles. Unlike the view of Radak, who says, no, nobody survived, Abarbanel says, of course people survived regarding those battles. So I would make the same argument here, and this is what Ethi was saying, that, yeah, people survived in these battles as well. And that's actually what Professor Keel says in the Dat Mikra, in source number 4. He says, Kaven shlok pidu lahachrimes Amalek. They were not careful to destroy Amalek. V'hachayalim asku betfisat hashalal. The soldiers went to go get spoils. So l'nasnu daitam b'midam aspekes lahashmides Amalekim. They did not pay proper attention to destroy Amalek. V'henichu l'rabim mehem lehimalek. And they let many of them escape. The answer is people got away, according to the Dat Mikra approach. And as Sandy noted, we did have that Rashi back in chapter 15, who said the reason they're supposed to kill the animals of Amalek is because the Amaleki would escape by disguising themselves as animals. Well, since you didn't kill the animals, maybe indeed some of the Amaleki escaped that way. You could give that answer. But the bottom line is you have two basic approaches. Either there were other communities of Amalek, and I think that's really supported in our text, or there were people who got away the first time around and they regrouped. Right? Those are your options. Clear? I just mention it because every time we bring up Amalek, we should mention this consideration. So our chapter is going to tell the following story in brief. David and his men have been away from their base in the city of Ziklag, right? Because they went with Achish to go to the battle. Whether they went to Afek or Shunem, they went somewhere. They come back to Ziklag after 3 days, because they've been sent home, and lo and behold, Amalek has attacked. They raided the city, they took the women and children as captives, they burned the city to the ground, and the people are livid. They're obviously upset. They, where are their wives and their kids? But they're angry at David for reasons we'll have to discuss. David reacts by asking Hashem, should I go fight Amalek? Hashem says, you bet. And he goes and he fights Amalek and he gets their stuff back. There's more that's going to happen, obviously. There are a few major things that I didn't mention. But if I approach this chapter with a question we've asked about many of our chapters, whose story is this? The most basic answer, given the narrative I just I just outlined, is it's David's story. This is the story of David. If you take a look at source number 5, I brought you Professor Keel's comment from his summary of the chapter. At the end of the chapter in the Dot Mikra, he gives a little bit of a summary. He says, Ikara shel ha-parsha, the essence of this portion, hu sipur derech hisnaguso shel David ve'eis tzara, is about what David's going to do in a time of crisis. That way we learn about his traits which caused him to be selected as king. Who beso, him and his household, limloch al Yisrael ad olam, to reign over Israel forever. So you want to know why Hashem chose David? Look at this chapter, see what David does, and that is going to provide you with some insight into why David is special. And he actually identifies at least 4 Davidic themes in the chapter, which we're going to watch play out. How David acts as a leader in a time of crisis, and we'll see multiple crises in this chapter. Number 2, the contrast between David's conduct here and Shaul's history. How would Shaul have reacted? How is that different from what David does? Number 3, David as a king who practices justice. We will see that when it comes to one of the crises that he's going to have with his men. And then finally, David's growth as Hashem's king specifically, as we'll see played out. That's what we're talking about. Ruth, I think you're clapping, but you wanted to raise your hand.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
That's okay.
Clapping
is fine, by the way. Yeah.
I'm wondering, where was Shaul? Why was David attacking
them?
Shaul was still king.
Shaul is fighting the Plishtim. I don't understand. Ruth, sorry, have you been keeping up with the recordings?
Yes.
Okay.
I forgot.
And that's possible also, but Shaul is, as you saw in chapter 28, rallying the Jews to fight the Plishtim. David is with his group of 600 men.
Okay.
Yeah. There may be more than 600, we'll see. But that's basically what's going on here. Ricky and then Claudette.
That was my question.
Oh, okay, Claudette.
I would say it was God's design that Achish sent him back, that he got the opportunity to go save his children and women.
Yeah, and commentators do note that if David had his way, when would they have gotten back to the city at all? Very true. We're going to see a little bit of that in Rav Bazak. I don't know if we'll get to that today. Janine?
I just wanted to know, where geographically were the Amalekim? Was Amalek?
Amalek is down south. Yeah, Amalek is down south, but again, it's very clear that there are multiple groups. Their home base is close to Egypt, right near Gaza. Just not in Plishti territory, but right near it. If you remember in chapter 15, when they fought the war, Mechavila bo'acha shur, asher al p'nei Mitzrayim. Right? From Chavila by Shur, you have to know where either of those places is. But al p'nei Mitzrayim, we understand. It's right near Egypt. At the same time, remember that they are descendants of Esav, and Edom occupies the whole south, going over, even east of the Yam HaMelach. So, they're not limited to the southwest, but I think that's their base. Keep in mind as well, we see them wandering through the Midbar. Right? You meet them in Parshas Beshalach. Now, that's much earlier, but they by tradition, we usually understand them to be nomads and raiders. So, they're not locked into a specific site, and especially if you live down there, you don't have much in the way of fields. That's not really happening. They didn't have modern Israeli agriculture. Okay. Anybody else? Did I miss anybody? Okay. So you can definitely read this, as we just said, as Professor Keel indicates, as David's story. But I think this is also a story about David's men. Remember that we were introduced to them back in chapter 22 as hard, bitter, desperate people. These were people who owed money, they had creditors they had trouble with, right? In chapter 24, we saw them push David to kill Shaul in the cave, right? And we suggested that this reflected a poor character at the time. David has to calm them down. In chapter 26, we saw that character in Avishai in particular, who is close to David. However, they are also loyal. They followed David in poverty, right? And think about that story with Nabal, right? Where they've got nothing. They went south and north and east at divine command. David is all over the place. We talked about that. He went down to Paran. He came back up. He was about in Gedi. David is running around the country, and they go with him. David mobilizes them for all sorts of battles, including ones that, frankly, they don't need, right? They save Keilah, right? David asks Hashem, you know, should we go take care of Keilah? You can imagine his men are just like, you know, why are we endangering ourselves? We're the ones who are on the run. They took care of Nabal's shepherds. They fought Amalek and Geshur and the Geziri, and yet they followed him when he didn't let them fight Shaul. You know? Like, these are very loyal people. They even joined the Plishtim, and apparently if David had said, guess what, we're attacking the Jews, they would have gone along for the ride. You know, there's no indication of any objection from them. But here, we get a crisis of loyalty for them. That's going to come up in a big way in this chapter. And it maybe that's meant to foreshadow issues that are going to come up for the nation during David's tenure as king. So yes, this is a story about David, but I think it's also a story of the nation as a whole. You follow? That's my thought. So outline of the chapter, just so you can, you know, get as clear a picture as possible of the chapter. It begins, again, David and his men come back to Ziklag to find what Amalek has done to the city and how they've taken everybody captive. David appeals to God, saying, what do I do? God says, yeah, pursuing Amalek's a good idea and you will succeed. There's a random Egyptian who was a servant of an Amalekite who helps David to attack Amalek. David defeats Amalek. And then there's a fight over dividing up the spoils because not all of David's men went to fight. And they don't necessarily, the warriors don't necessarily want to share with the people who did not fight. And David is going to insist on dividing up the spoils with everyone. And then we get this little poem about his conquests. That's our chapter. Clear? Okay. Ready to start then. Okay. So take a look, please, at the beginning of the chapter. Perek Lamed, Pasuk Aleph. Vayihi bevo David v'anashav Tziklag b'yom ha'shalishi. It was when David and his men came to Tziklag on day 3, right? They've been away with Achish. They are now back. Va'amaleki fashtu el Negev v'al Tziklag v'yaku et Tziklag v'yasrifu osaba ish. The Amaleki had spread out to the Negev, to Tziklag, they struck Tziklag, and they burned it. Now here, I'm going to have you jump to sentence 14. Sentence 14 is the account. Sandy, I'm not ready for hands yet. I'm sorry. I want to make sure everybody hears this. The sentence 14 is the account given by the Egyptian of the attack by Amalek. He says, "Anachnu pashatnu Negev hakreisi ve'al asher liYehuda ve'al Negev kalev." We spread out the south of the Kreisi, that's its own population, we think, as well as Yehuda and Negev kalev. When we actually see Pasuk Yadalid, we'll talk more about this. But the idea is the descendants of Kalev, it appears. And Ve'ez Tziklag Sarafnu Ba'esh, and we burned Tziklag in a fire. So, if I read that, I don't have the sense that they were targeting Tziklag. We went to the Crecy, we went to the Calais, and we burned Ziklag. At the same time, he says, we burned Ziklag. We didn't burn anything else. Right? So now, I want to understand, what exactly was this about? Why did they come? Why did they burn Ziklag? What was this all about? The text really makes it unclear to me. It sounds like a general attack in the area and targeting Ziklag. So the Mefarshim, the commentators, read this as having a definite revenge element. If you take a look at source number 6, look at Radak, and Malbim says it as well. He says, Sha'amaleki pashtu el negev Ziklag, the Amaleki extended to the south of Ziklag. Ricky, no, I really want to get through this, and I want to make sure that everybody hears it. The Awaria people asking questions and then missing and then asking about the thing that I just explained. So it says they extended to Negev Ziklag, to the south of Ziklag. What Radak is doing is along the way, he's answering a question about the text itself, because the sentence said, El Negev ve'el Ziklag, to the south and to Ziklag. So he's explaining what that means is to the south of Ziklag. Because they, the Amalekim, were investigating until they found that in fact the people who were attacking them came from Ziklag. In other words, Amalek knows that they have had populations that have been attacked, and they're looking for their attacker. So what David did in chapter 27 is coming back to haunt him. In chapter 27, he attacked Amalek, Geziri, Geshuri, and lo and behold, Amalek is not going to take it sitting down. So they go looking for who was it who attacked us, and they find it's Ziklag. Even though Radak, unlike Abarbanel, thinks David left nobody alive, so you go ask, you ask the neighbors. Eventually somebody is going to say, we saw something. That's the idea. There's an investigation, and Malbim says it as well. They track down that it was David, and that's why they come to Ziklag. Abarbanel picks up on, if you look at source number 7, he picks up on the burning point. He says, Vasibasha et Ziklag levada sarfu ba'esh. The reason why they specifically burned Ziklag, haisa kedesha lo yuchal David lihisyashev ba'od, was so that David wouldn't be able to live there anymore, because they understood that was where he had attacked from. Lefisha yotzei misham lashmides kol ha'eretz ha'maleki. That was his base from which he attacked Amalek. So the commentators pick up on the fact that on the one hand, it says they attacked the area, the south, and on the other hand, it says they burned Ziklag, and they say, yeah, this was an attempt to find who it was who had been attacking them. Is everyone clear on that? Okay, thank you for waiting. I'm sorry for being harsh about not taking questions, but otherwise I end up with the same point over and over. Sandy, and then Ricky.
You answered my question. So
excellent. Mission accomplished. Yes, Ricky.
That's all I need to apologize. It also helps that David's two wives were there, from my understanding.
Oh, we're getting there. We're getting there.
But that's another reason to sort of put a little bit of a kink in his underpin.
I mean, the question is, what's going to upset David? We have to see, because a lot's going to upset David. That we'll have to see. So go back to sentence 2. Let's be Pasuk Beis now. Vayishbu es hanashim asher ba. They take captive all the women in the city. Mikaton v'ad gadol. From young to old, we assume it means. Lo hem isu ish. They did not kill anyone. And they took them and they went on their way. They lead off the captives. Now here you find something that is surprising. Was there no defense of the city? Were there no defenders? If you go back to chapter 25, sentence 13, when David went to war against Nabal, right, until Abigail stopped him, Did all of David's men go to war? No. He took 400 with him, and he left 200 behind. So why didn't he leave anybody behind to protect the city of Ziklag? So we are going to see a view that's going to suggest that he actually did leave some behind. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a bit below. I'm not ready for that.
Hang on. That's masculine.
Yeah, but it's referring generally. It's not about the women per se. It's just young to old. I think they read it. We're also going to find that they took the children, which seems to be male and female. We're going to see that in a little bit. I see the hand, but I want to ask you a question first. So why didn't David leave anybody in the city? Any men, I should say, to defend the city. Whereas with Nabal, he left some behind. Sandy?
I'd imagine because he felt he had the protection of Achish.
But Achish is going off to war against the Jews. Achish
but it's still his city, so by attacking Achish when he came back would attack them.
So you're not saying
but
that Achish would have...
Territory.
You're
right.
Not, right, it's not Achish's protection, it's Achish's name.
Yes.
People would be afraid.
This is my area. From here to here, my grazing ground, my living ground.
Okay, maybe. So maybe, that could be.
Attacking me, almost.
That could be. What else? I can think of a bunch of reasons, but that sounds like a good one. Claudette.
Maybe it supports the theory that David was planning to sabotage, so he had to have enough men to do so.
You know, David needs his men with Achish.
Yes.
And he's going to leave all the women and children vulnerable? That sounds like a very dubious move. It's an interesting idea. I'm not discounting it. It's just a very dubious move.
But
he would really leave everybody vulnerable.
Philistines to protect that area because of the relationship they think that he had with Achish.
Well, again, Achish is not protecting it. The only thing you could hope for is what Sandy had said, that people are afraid of Achish, therefore they won't attack. I suspect the answer may be much more down to earth, which is he's going to battle Nabal. Nabal, the wealthy guy with his estate, doesn't need David's 600 men to wipe him out. David can afford to leave a couple of hundred behind, and he's got plenty. That's an answer. I think another answer is that it's to show Achish how devoted he is and how valuable his support is. I have 600 men, and maybe that's a little bit like what Claudette is saying. It's valuable for him to bring everybody out to the war. But my last answer to you will be, we're going to see an idea from Malbim in a little bit, suggesting that this raid on Ziklag by Amalek was actually from God. Hashem engineered it with a particular goal in mind. And if so, maybe Hashem causes David in some way not to leave anybody behind. We're going to see what that means, that Hashem is engineering it. Hopefully today, maybe next week, we'll see how far we get. But Malam has a fascinating theory of this whole story, as he has with many stories. Yes, Janine?
I just want to know, was David in Ziklag when he went after Nabal? No,
that was when he was in Paran. He wasn't with the Plishtim at that point.
I wonder if there's some difference in the kind of place he was in at this point.
Could be. You could make the argument that Paran is somehow more dangerous. I don't know. Maybe. Okay, so let's see what happens. Oh, Nanette, you had your hand up before. Do you have a question? You're muted.
Yes, thank you. Two things. My translation is not young and old. My translation is low-born and high-born.
Fascinating.
So I think that's a real difference.
Well, it wouldn't answer the question of Ketana Gedola if we're talking about women.
No, but it would answer the question of the fact that there was no differential in status. When David left it unprotected, he perhaps didn't necessarily think that his wives would be attacked.
Why not? They're a prize.
well, that that well, maybe they thought that the Yamalek would differentiate between highborn and lowborn. And if you're correct, then what could have potentially been was a miscalculation.
Maybe.
That David is not and or pride. He doesn't believe, having left his wife highborn, he doesn't, his wife's highborn, he doesn't think that they're in danger.
I'm skeptical. What, who, which edition is it that has that?
Lowborn and highborn?
Yeah.
JPS.
Interesting. I wonder where they're getting that. I don't know. Okay. What was your other? You had two, right?
That's it.
Okay. So, let's see what happens. Pasuk Gimel. Vayavod David va'anashav el ha'ir v'hinei srufa ba'esh. David and his men come to the city and it is burned. Unishayhem, uvnehem, uvnosehem, nishbu. Their wives, their sons, their daughters are gone. Continuing next pasuk, vayisad David v'ha'am asher ito es kolam vayivku. David and his men start crying. Ad asher ein b'hem kolach livkos, to the point where they have no strength to cry further. I'm going to come back to that phrase, not this week, but going forward, because it may remind you of something that we saw. Not in chapter 29, it's not in the most recent chapter, but we saw a phrase that may remind you of. Ushtei nishei David nishbu. David's two wives are taken, the two who we know about right now, as opposed to Michal, who is, you know, we don't know exactly what's up with her. But the two we do know of. Achinoam ha-Yisraelis, we've talked about her. Va-Abigail eshes Nabal ha-Karmeli, and Abigail, who had been the wife of Nabal. It's kind of weird that we keep mentioning that, isn't it? But nonetheless, that's the way we know her. Vateitzer leDavid meod, and David is very upset. Ki amru ha'am lesoklo, the people, because the people want to stone him. That's a phrase we use back in Chumash, right? Od me'at uskaluni, Moshe says. Only a little more, and they're gonna stone me. Ki mara nefesh kal ha'am ish abana ve'abanosav. Everybody is very bitter. They're very upset about their children. Presumably their wives also, but it mentions the children. Vayischazek David b'Hashem Elokav. And David strengthens himself with Hashem. And the next thing is going to be him consulting God about what to do. David has a dual crisis. He has lost his wives, and the leadership of the people is in trouble because they are rebelling against him. Very interesting. I noted it for you on the sheet in source number 8. I didn't want to go into it, like, it's not, I don't want it to become a distraction, but the Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah picks up on Tehillim chapter 27, sentences 2 and 3. If you don't want to flip to your Tehillim, but you remember LeDavid Hashem Ori, that chapter which we say daily in Elul is chapter 27 in Tehillim. So you may remember, Bikrov alay mereim le'echol es bisari. When those who are mereim, not mereim like friends, when those who cause harm come near to me, le'echol es bisari, to consume my flesh. So the Medrash says that's David talking about how the Amalekim took bisari, they took his wives. And he continues to say, im tachana alay machana, lo yirali bi, im takum alay machama, bezosani botayach. If you bring a camp against me, I'm not going to fear, I'm going to rely on Hashem. Which is David's reaction here. So they link chapter 27 in Tehillim to this event. So the men are angry at David. Why are they angry at David? Why blame David? What, why is this David's fault?
Could it be because David took them away?
Right. So Mitzudas David. Good. Mitzudas David in source number 9 is on the same page as Susan. Al shahayim esaveid laredes lamilchamayim achish. Because he caused them to go to war with Achish, meaning by his side. And that's why Amalek came and attacked, right? The chicken's coming home to roost. You took us out, and therefore, this happened. Now, we've said we don't know that David has a choice, or thinks he has a choice. He thinks that he needs to do this, and if he doesn't do it, Achish is going to suspect him of wrongdoing. Or he's trying to do it in order to save the Jews by being able to sabotage. But either way, David thought, you know, this is necessary what he's doing. Nonetheless, that's definitely one approach. Malbim says, it's what I ate, what I said. You should have left guards. Source number 10. Malbim says, Vatetzer lo ma'od ki amru am l'soklo. He's upset. The nation wants to stone him. Al shalom in yak tzat mehem l'shmor ha'ir. Because you didn't leave anybody behind to guard the city. This is, you know, tactics 101. Why didn't you do that? I mean, you know, you're all very smart now. Like, where were you when I was going out to war? 3 days ago, you should have told me I should leave somebody behind. But that's Malbim. Abar Benel goes psychological. He says, David is very upset. But Tetzar LeDavid Me'od isn't just about the people being, you know, angry at him. It's about his own wives. And the nation says to him, David, you're a leader. You don't get the right to personal grief. That's not the way it works. Take a look at source number 11. Ulefisha hu haya maflig biagon ubitzara al nashav. He increased, maflig, he increased his sorrow and pain for his wives. Vaya misatzel mehanekama besibasta itzavon. He was slow to take revenge on the Plishtim because he was upset. Cheref af ha'am negdo, v'amru l'soklo. He was slow, and the nation said, how dare you? They wanted to stone him. Ba'omram shegam kein ha'yalahem itzavon al hashem uvenehem. You know, we're upset also. V'lama yisad seif David yoseh meharoi. Why are you not acting? Why are you going beyond the normal grief? Yeah, we feel grief too, but we want to get our family back. You, David, should be on the same page as us. And all the more so, actually, I see Abar Benel doesn't say this precisely, but I think more so, you being the leader. You could give another answer. Maybe it's because David keeps talking about Hashem helping him. Right? All those speeches about Shaul, and we're not going to attack Shaul, and God is going to take care of it, and God is going to take care of it. So the people are like, you know, you keep talking about God taking care of things, and look where it got us. Maybe there's some, you know, resentment for that. But I think the most likely explanation... Sorry, Janine, you were going to say?
Well, it's kind of putting the cart before the horse, because it says in the pasuk he was sorrowful because the nation. It was not that he was more sorrowful and therefore they attacked him.
Yeah.
He was sorrowful because they attacked him.
Right. I felt like that was a weakness in Abar Benel. I definitely hear that. Ricky, you were going to say?
The men also lost their possessions and they lost their cattle.
Yeah,
that's the ones who are living there.
Right, but no one seems to be talking about that here. Keep in mind.
Know, but that's why I'm talking about it.
Right, but keep in mind, they're also broke.
Pardon?
They're broke. They don't have anything. Remember, we talked about how they're so desperate, that's why they have to come to the Plishtim in the first place.
But
and we talked about them needing to attack the local tribes, and Abar Benel suggested they don't have anything. They're inhabiting a Philistine city. You don't get to take those houses with you, and you don't get to sell them to somebody else when, you know, and turn a profit.
There was a Philistine city that we're talking about?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. One more.
Go back to chapter 27 and David saying he didn't want to be in the capital and all of that. Yeah.
Why is it necessary to ask Hashem? Isn't it obvious that David should go and...
So that's coming next. We're not at that story. We're at this story right now. Susan, we're not there yet.
Okay, but just an interesting point, if you take it to today, when Princess Diana died and the queen went to stay with the boys, everybody was angry that she wasn't taking care of the people and she had to leave them and come and take care of the people, which is like the same message that you just said.
I'll tell you the truth, I don't remember that. I remember when she died, not because I was ever a royal watcher, and it's not something that I'm really very familiar with, but I was, that night, I was moving from New York to Rhode Island, and we were driving up 95 forever, and I remember the radio had nothing else. It was all about that. But I don't remember anybody in that period saying that. Wow, that would be terrible if they said that. That's awful.
After she went to Balmoral for 4 days, and the people were yelling, where is she? And apparently it was in the paper, why is the queen ruling the people?
Wow.
Which is the same story, well, the same thing
okay.
You just said.
Okay. I think though the most I hear what everybody is saying here, and I hear the different points and what the commentators have to say. But to me, the most basic and most likely explanation is simply because this is what bitter and desperate people do. Someone's got to be blamed, right? If I am suffering, it's somebody's fault. That to me is the rationale. But let's ask the question the other way now. We've asked why the people are angry for it. Why did God allow this to happen? What is this about? Why is it that Hashem would let Amalek come along? Hashem takes care of David. How does this happen? So I'm going to offer us three approaches. We'll see if we get through all of them for today. Otherwise, we come back to it. First approach from Rav Bazak. And it goes back to my comment before about the chickens coming home to roost. This wouldn't have happened if you hadn't been out with Achish. Rav Bazak has an approach which I have to tell you I don't like. And that's why it's the first approach I'm mentioning in the three. Usually I try to bring the later ones later. But take a look at source number 12. He says, Barur shadavid lo hiskaven lifgoa b'Yisrael. It's obvious that David, when he was going to go with the Plishtim, never intended to help the Plishtim attack the Jews. Whatever you think he was going to do, sabotage the Plishtim, not sabotage the Plishtim, be a bodyguard for Achish, he was never planning on attacking the Jews. El l'shamesh beis hatzarach kigis chamishi. He wanted to be, in the case of need, a fifth column. Right? He's taking the sabotage view. That David would have sabotaged the Plishtim if need be. She if na orif le Plishtim be seyayel Yisrael, he would turn his back on the Plishtim, he would help the Jews. Bidyuk fishatan usaria Plishtim, exactly what the Plishti officer said he would do. Imzos, amadnu akach, she'etzem itziaso shal David imachish le melchama inena chiyuvit. Rav Bazak has been making the argument in his commentary all along that he thinks David going out to battle beside Achish was wrong in and of itself, even if he's not going to attack the Jews. V'gam maris ayin zmanis shabgida ba'am Yisrael einena ma'aseh ra'ui. It's inappropriate for him to give the appearance of betraying the Jews. Uma'od shadavin itzel al tmimuso shel Achish. In addition to that, he took advantage of the naivete of Achish. Achish is not presented as a bad guy in our story here, right? Neither in chapter 21 when David first came, nor in chapter 27. That's not an entirely innocent thing to do, taking advantage of naivete of Achish. So Rav Bazak thinks that this is a punishment. You want to pretend and take advantage of Achish? You want to act like you're going to go to war against the Jews? Oh, I'm going to take you down. That's the way that he reads it. I find this answer very difficult, because I don't think David had a choice. I don't think there was another move he could have made. I don't see it. But that's argument one for why Hashem lets this happen. The answer is Hashem didn't just let it happen. Hashem made it happen in order to punish David. Second approach, the easiest approach. It's not that Hashem made it happen. This was a natural event. Amalek is angry that their stuff's been taken, that their people are being killed, and they go looking for whoever it was who did it. Not only that, Hashem mitigated it. Radak and Malbim both say it. Take a look at source number 13, where I brought it from. Radak, umisibos habore yizbarach umishmiraso as ohavav hayash Eloheimisu ish veisha. He says it was only because God made it so, because God protects those who love Him, that they didn't end up killing any men or women. Shrei David harag kama mehem. David killed lots of Amaleki. You would have expected the Amaleki would have killed lots of David's people. Doesn't happen. Why not? Hashem makes sure it doesn't happen. Hashem puts it in their head somehow that they should not attack anybody. That's Radak's suggestion, and Malbim notes that as well. So this view is it wasn't God making it happen, it was God allowing it to happen. But then there's a third possibility, and this is ingenious. And this is what I was hinting to earlier regarding Malbim's perspective on the story. Malbim believes that Hashem engineered this specifically. Hashem wanted this to happen. Not as punishment. But let me ask you a question. Once Malbim says it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's obvious. David knows the Plishtim are about to attack the Jews. David is not able to go with the Plishtim and sabotage. What should David do next? What should be David's next move? Sorry, what, Ricky? Ethi?
Go on the side of the Jews.
Sorry, what?
Go on the side of Shaul.
Go on the side of Shaul. He should join the Jews. This isn't just, you know, we're so numb to the Plishtim attacking the Jews because it happens so many times in this book. But each attack is a threat. So he should have helped the Jews. So Malbim says, look at number 14. The Gufa Davar Haya Bahashkacha, this was at Hashem's supervision. Shiyiya David Mechuyav Lilchom Al Hatzaras Nefshos Beiso. This was so that David would be obligated to fight to save the lives of his family. The Pater Mileches Lazer Yisrael Negen HaPlishtim, and he would be exempt from going to aid Israel against the Plishtim. And when he says be exempt, what I think he means is, number one, innocent in the eyes of the Jews, why isn't David helping us? But also, so that he wouldn't feel a duty to go. He has a job to do. He has to go save their people. And I think that supports what we said from Rav Bazak in chapter 29, when we said, Rav Bazak's explanation for why we flipped the order of the stories, right, was because Hashem wants Shaul to lose. In order for Shaul to lose, David can't be with Achish, we said, right? And not only that, David has to be distracted so that he doesn't come in on the side of the Jews. You follow? And maybe, now I come back to it, maybe that's why Hashem causes David not to leave anybody to guard Ziklag. Because he doesn't want that. He wants David to be occupied with getting back those who had been taken. You follow? I thought that idea from Malbim, I thought, was very sharp. Yes, Claudette.
After this war, where did David go when he left the Plishtim?
He didn't leave the Plishtim. He's home with the Plishtim right now.
After fighting the Amalekites, he still stayed there because they said it was burnt and David could.
Yeah, so we'll see. That has to play out in the next two chapters. We'll see what we know about where David is. Yeah, there's more for us to see yet. Okay, so what we've seen then, aside from our review of chapter 29, is that David and his men come back to find this, and Amalek attacked out of revenge. The people blame David for going to war with Achish, so he's out of town, not leaving the guards, wallowing in his grief, just cause. I haven't seen anybody who suggested that they blame him for attacking Amalek in the first place. I don't know. Maybe that's another possibility. I don't know. But either way, David is going to go to war next in order to get back their lost people. Ricky, you were going to say?
When Hashem wants something to happen, why does there have to be all this manipulation and mechanization?
Because that's in Tanakh the way Hashem usually operates. You know, think about dreams in Sefer Bereishis. Every time Hashem wants something to happen, somebody dreams. Right? Lavan, Abimelech, Yosef, Paro, you know, it's just like the butler baker. Every time something happens, Hashem moves somebody to act, causes somebody to act, and sometimes it's more overt and sometimes it's more covert.
But Hashem created the heavens and the earth and everything else.
Yeah.
any manipulation. Why can't he just say, okay, Shaul, you're finished, David, now, and without...
Because that's not the way Hashem runs our world. You can see it in Tanakh, and you can see it today. Hashem is giving us a stage on which to operate, and he nudges things along from time to time. There's more to be said.
That's a good word, a stage. I like that. Thank you.
Shakespeare did it first. Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. I'm going to ask people to hold their questions for next time rather than now, because I'm going to have to run, and I know Claudette has a question separate. So I'm going to